On the rebound from our trip to Nuremberg, this is Novell Open Audio. Welcome back to Novell Open Audio, the podcast that connects the Novell universe with what's going on inside and around Novell. Okay, I said it backwards that time, but we are back. Aaron Quill and I have just returned as of Saturday night, back to, where are we again?
We are back in the States.
We're back in the United States. We're back in our recording studio in Provo, and we've got a lot of material for you guys coming up here. But let's start... We went to a conference called Lug Radio Live, built around the Lug Radio podcast. And Aaron, this is pretty much your first time having really interacted intensely with some of the Lug Radio community. I've had that privilege by going on the UK Lug tour and stuff. What did you think of the conference? What were some of the things about it?
As long as you don't tell too many people, because I don't want the thing to be too crowded next year, it was by far the best Linux conference I have ever been to. It was absolutely phenomenal.
Why? What about it?
So there were a couple things. Probably one of the things that I liked best was the quality of the attendees. The conversations that I had with people were just fantastic. Normally, when we go to one of these shows and I've got to sit behind a booth or whatever, really all you get is people coming up to you and doing one of two things. Either they want to gripe and complain about things without really talking about real solutions. They just want to vent, or they want free stuff. And I didn't experience any of that at the show.
Yeah, it's a far cry from like the big like corporate Linux events and things. I won't name any of them specifically, but I mean, this was not a vendor fest at all, was it?
No, not at all. It was just very cool people to hang out with and have intense conversations. And like I was kind of alluding to before, it was just so cool to, when somebody had a complaint, you could really sit down, understand what the issue is they were having, so that then it's easier for us to take over to engineering and explain to them what the community wants to see.
And we got to do a lot of fairly intense stuff with people, like where we were actually helping them get things like XGL, desktop effects, that kind of stuff going on laptops and things. That's a blast for us.
It was killer, yeah. People were bringing up, you know, we showed Sledoff quite a bit during the show, and people were bringing their laptops up to us. We were helping them load up XGL, doing whatever they wanted to get their machine up and running. And in fact, we even helped a couple guys who weren't running the SLED distro. They were running other distros, and we were helping them get XGL running.
Yeah, so it was a great show all around. I really enjoyed it, and I hope we can head back next year again.
Yeah, the one other thing that I want to comment about this show, well, actually, I've got two additional comments. One was my interaction with other distros. It was really the first time that I had been to a show where it wasn't, you know, our distro against your distro. I mean, I had just fantastic conversations with the Ubuntu guys, with the Debian guys, with several different people there.
Absolutely. Well, okay, so I'm going to give one little exception on this. The Red Hat guys did put a almost a kick me sign on my back.
They put a Red Hat sticker on your back. They put a Red Hat
logo on our booth.
But we did have fun with them. They gave us a bag of Red Hat material.
That was actually for our charitable contribution to Amnesty International that we did in as part of the fundraiser behind clipping off Jonah Bacon's beard. Pictures now on my blog. But yeah, so we ended up with the prize for that, the bags of Red Hat gear.
Yeah, of various Red Hat gear. And so what we did is when Ted and I had our session, if you asked a stupid question during the session, you got a piece of Red Hat propaganda.
Thanks, Red Hat. Appreciate the help. But no, seriously, the Red Hat guys were very cool with us. I think we were very cool with them, or at least I tried to be. You probably were cool with them. But all the different vendors that were there, there was not that whole kind of animosity or anything. It was very much a community feel to it.
Yeah.
What was the other thing?
Well, the other thing was, for the first time, I was at a conference where somebody couldn't describe me by saying, go find the small guy with the weird beard, because pretty much everybody there had some strange facial hair thing going on.
Yeah. Yeah, you were actually decidedly less freaky looking than most of the audience there, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it's weird when I'm the conservative looking one. I'm not used to that at all.
So, but I guess the last thing is, we did a Birds of a Feather session, and we also did a presentation. We had a lot of people come up to us afterward, and or in the Birds of a Feather session, and give us all kinds of feedback, especially about things that they like or didn't like about SUSE Linux.
Yeah, we actually, in that Birds of a Feather, took pages and pages of notes of questions that people had, as well as I got a chance to sit down with a couple individuals and get their feedback, and we were able to, it was just perfect timing, because right after that, we left for Nuremberg, and we were able to take all those questions and ask them of the actual engineers when they were still fresh in our head.
For people that don't know, when we say Nuremberg, we're talking about Nuremberg, Germany, which is where SUSE has traditionally been based and where they are still based today. So we got to go to the SUSE offices with this feedback from a lot of friends that we made at Lug Radio Live and go straight to the engineers and ask them questions about it and get feedback. And we made one friend there, Hein Peter, who was a cool dude from Netherlands, and just outside of Amsterdam, and he actually gave us a ton of feedback, more feedback than just about anybody else.
Yeah, actually, I do feel bad for Hein Peter. Hein Peter is just absolutely a fantastic individual.
He's the dude.
He's just a dude, and he just gave me a page full of notes to go, of questions to go ask the engineers, and unfortunately, we saw Hein Peter right on our way back from Germany, didn't we, Ted?
Yeah, we actually hung out with him in Amsterdam for pretty much the better part of an evening, took him out to dinner and everything, and let him know all the answers to all of his questions.
And apparently, we were a little bit hyper when we were doing it,
We were pumped up about having been to Nuremberg and talking to all these cool engineers that are there and learning a lot of stuff that we'd only heard about from the same kind of stuff that most of Novell's customers hear about stuff from, like auto build and things. Now here we get to hear about it for real and right from these guys' mouths. And so we're all pumped up on this. And
finally, Hein Peter just goes, "Do you guys realize it's like spending an entire evening with Novell Open Audio?" He couldn't believe that what you hear on Novell Open Audio is really close to our personalities and how we are in real life, except edited a fair amount.
Yeah, really, because there's a lot of slips. But anyway, the thing that Hein Peter actually came up when he first introduced himself to me, or actually John O'Bacon brought him up to me to introduce me, the first thing he said is, "I'm going to punch you." And it's because he had listened to 5 hours straight of Novell Open Audio just before that. So then he comes around, or we come back down to Amsterdam and hang out with him. And sure enough, he gets another 5 hours straight of Novell Open Audio from us. It was pretty bad.
And I do want to have one other statement that I'd like to make that I heard from all of our travels was people didn't believe that this announcer voice you hear from Ted is his real voice, and that's actually how he talks, and that he does just in normal conversation drop into an announcer voice. It has nothing to do with Novell Open Audio. That's just Ted.
It's just my odd personality defect. So anyway, we got all these interviews. We talked to all these different engineers about stuff. We put it on our blog, so Aaron's going to have a blog post, or has a blog post probably by the time this episode's on air, listing out many of the interviews. I've already posted one thing of some of the interviews that we've gone through. So we'll link to our blogs from this particular episode so you can check out all the different stuff that we've done. But let's check out our first interview right now. All right, to kick this off, let's start with a quick look at what the difference is between our community distribution, the one that's freely downloadable, and our commercial distribution called SUSE Linux Enterprise, which includes both the desktop and the enterprise server version. Starting with the community edition, OpenSUSE, or as it's classically been known, SUSE Linux 10.0, SUSE Linux 10.1, OpenSUSE is really a distribution that is intended for people who are Linux geeks, Linux heads, and it's not an official supported distribution. It's supported more through lists and things like that, and it generally has the bleeding edge stuff in it.
Yeah, it has a quick turnaround time. We see a new version of OpenSUSE anywhere in between every
six months or so.
Yeah, somewhere between 6 and 9 months. Yeah. And generally, what we do with OpenSUSE is we put a lot of bleeding edge technology in there. You'll see multiple versions of a specific class of application. So if you're looking at something that's going to allow you to look at photos, you're not going to see just one specific application. There's a good chance you're going to see four or five, so you can really take a look at the different applications and make a choice for yourself what you think is best. list.
Yeah, and the other thing is you'll find there are so many packages in there to try out and test, but a lot of the stuff that gets in there much earlier than the enterprise things because it hasn't necessarily been tested as thoroughly or hardened as much. So like Xen, however you want to say it, that was all put into earlier versions of SUSE Linux on the OpenSUSE side and has finally hit SUSE Linux Enterprise Server in version 10, where it's actually an officially supported released item. I think it might have been released in a service pack through SLES 9 or something.
Yeah, actually, I think you're correct there. But the point is, we use OpenSUSE a lot of times to harden applications. It gives us a chance to get the application out in the community and get them to start to play with it so that we can get more and more bug reports back and see if people are really going to use the application.
Now, the interview that we've got coming up, this is going to focus on SUSE Linux Enterprise, although we do have an interview coming up after we get through several SUSE Linux Enterprise things to give an update with OpenSUSE, so that you get a little bit of an idea of what's going on with OpenSUSE from both the developer evangelist as well as the product manager for that and some of the things they're trying to do with the community. Now, this interview, our goal on this was not to go for the marketing points on SUSE Linux Enterprise, but to talk to some of the people who lived in the trenches through the whole development cycle. If you want the marketing points, you're going to find those on web pages and product flyers and things like that. And those are generally produced by people who work in product marketing or PMM, product marketing managers. Those people are frontline to the exposure of the product to the world generally through marketing messages and things, but they work in close conjunction with somebody called the product manager. Aaron and I have both been product managers.
Yeah, product manager is generally the person who talks to customers, listens to what customers really want to see in the product, and they take those concepts that the customer wants and they turn them into requirements.
And they live inside this world called the PRD, the product requirements document. That document, though, is negotiated and worked on between usually the product manager and the engineering manager. The engineering manager leads up the engineering team, sets schedules and all those kind of things, and really does the job of saying what's possible for the product.
Yeah, and specifically what's possible within the given time frame.
Absolutely.
When they want to release the product.
Now, a couple other entities that exist in this, and these are the kind of people that we're going to be exposing to you in this interview. There's the QA manager, or quality assurance manager, or testing manager. And this person has to do the job of saying, does the software that the engineers are making actually meet the requirements that the product manager has specified?
Yeah, the other thing they do, of course, is they do testing. They make sure that the code is solid, is secure, and is really hardened and ready for the enterprise.
Right, so they live very intensely with the product. And they often have to interact with partners like, you know, the IBMs and the HPs and the Dells of the world in order to do testing on different hardware platforms and things as well. One last character in this whole equation, the project manager. The project manager herds cats. And what we mean by that is they have to actually rustle up all the different characters that we've already said, and keep them all on track, know when deliverables are supposed to come in, keep everybody on delivery schedules, or adjust schedules accordingly. So this person has a pretty tough job, especially when you get to SUSE, where you have people like who we're about to hear, where this is not just simple project management of looking at schedules and things, but it's interacting with various vendors, getting the driver downloads process working, and all this kind of stuff. And that's who we're about to hear from to find out what are the top five reasons for SUSE Linux Enterprise. Just off of our interview from Eric Anderson just a short time ago, we wanted to get a couple more details on SUSE Linux Enterprise. And for that purpose, Aaron and I, as one of the things we were doing in Nuremberg, are talking to some of the SUSE engineers about what they think are the reasons for SUSE Linux Enterprise. And so in retrospect here, I think we'll call this one our top five reasons for using SUSE Linux Enterprise. And joining us here in our small conference room / studio in Nuremberg is, first of all, Gerald Pfeiffer, who is a project manager working on SUSE Linux Enterprise's Linux coordination between different platforms. And maybe I don't say it quite right. So, Gerald, tell us about you. Tell us about your background and what you do at SUSE.
Hi. So, I joined SUSE on November 3rd of 2003.
You sound uncertain.
I'm pretty certain. That's one day before the acquisition of SUSE by Novell was announced.
So did you know it was going to happen before you took the job?
Can't comment on that.
If the SEC is listening, that was a no.
And I used to work at university as a research assistant and then as an assistant professor and participated in several open source projects such as GCC or Wine.
Which university was that?
It was Vienna University of Technology.
So you moved to Nuremberg for this job then?
Yeah, it's true.
All right.
So it's a pretty long commute, but it's worth it, I'd say.
What kind of things are you doing here now? What does this project manager role mean?
Yeah, I started focusing on Itanium and then the software development kit. These days, my main responsibility is everything related to our enterprise product and coordinating things with the enterprise products. So I'm the main interface on the SUSE level between product management and engineering when it comes to feature planning and schedule planning for the enterprise products on the one hand, and on the other hand, I'm one of the main interfaces working with partners on the engineering side.
I think our expression in English that we normally use, or at least in America, is, which is almost English, is herding cats. It sounds like you probably herd cats. Round up all the cats, get them all moving together.
Yeah, I think you could put it that way. I'm trying to herd. So you could also say that I'm not actually doing any work. I'm just trying to connect people and move connections around and knowledge around and tasks around, fortunately.
Great. Also joining us is Misha Istini, and he's director of SUSE Quality Assurance, or QA. Misha, welcome to. Thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi. I joined SUSE some 5 years ago. My history in Linux is quite long. I used to work for a Utah-based Linux company before.
Not Caldera, was it?
Sure.
There's a few people here that worked at Caldera at one point. Did our question that we've asked all of them, did you escape on time?
Yeah. almost everybody else who joined SUSE in this time, so we managed to bring the whole team over here a long time ago. And I built up the testing department inside Caldera and SCO at this time when we had at Caldera Linux development team. Joined SUSE 2001, and started to build up a QA team over here. And now I'm responsible for the testing quality assurance of all Linux products, if you want so. So from the box product up to the enterprise.
All right, so let's get started on it. Now that we've gotten a little bit of an idea of who you guys are, I want to get away from all the marketing bullet points and those kind of things and get your impression of what you guys think are the reasons why somebody should use an enterprise distribution, specifically SUSE Linux Enterprise, instead of using some kind of community distribution that may be out there. One of the things like, say, Debian or Ubuntu or any of the other free distributions out there. Why pay for Linux and why pay for SUSE Linux if somebody's going to do it? Do you guys have any kind of list that we can look at on that?
Support enterprise life cycles. These two are certain issues. That's marketing again, but our certification stacks from hardware certification to software certification. That's another one.
The testing efforts, the hardening of the whole product, of course, and most of all, the involvement of all the partners and customers that we have outside, which have a strong saying and a strong involvement from the planning phase up to the release phase.
All right. Well, let's maybe look into some of those. When you guys say partners, let's start with that one maybe. Tell us about what you mean by partners. What is it about partners and Novell, SUSE, that is different from, say, these other distributions?
Well, to begin with, some of these partners talk to us where they actually don't talk to most of the other distributions. So that's already one thing we bring to the table. If you look at how we develop products from the early planning phase to the implementation phase, the beta phase, and then the deployment, you will see that partners are extremely important for us. And we are pretty important for the partners and the customers for the same reasons.
Can I interrupt you for real quick? When you say partner is just kind of a generic term.
Yeah,
What are you referring to?
So, obviously, Novel has, virtually hundreds of partners. Those partners that are of most relevance to us in engineering are the big independent hardware vendors and the big independent software vendors.
So people like IBM, EMC, Dell.
HP, Dell, Oracle, SAP, Veritas.
And your component vendors. We're working with QLogic.
Adaptec, NVIDIA.
AMD and Intel, not to be forgotten. What this gives us is insights into the plans of those partners. For example, yesterday I got a hardware roadmap from Intel for the next 3 years, which I can't even give to any of you because you are not on that specific list.
We won't tell anyone, it's cool.
I can give it to you, I have to kill you afterwards.
He's probably serious about that too.
And this obviously does allow us to do planning with that information in the backs of our heads. Even if we can't reveal the information, we can do. We can ask our engineers to focus on specific areas because we know something is going to become important. We can ask our QA teams, and Mika can comment on that, to start thinking about how to test technology X.
So these kind of partnerships, when you're talking about these partnerships, then this is stuff that influences the development cycle. So when SUSE Linux Enterprise 10, not just as it's going out, this isn't just one of these handshake partnerships that, look good on paper and everything, but really it's not really meeting the road or anything like that. It's really, we're talking here, the partnership gave us these kind of plans early on in the development of SUSE Linux 10, and this was built in for not just where the technology was at the time, but where it was going. I guess that could be an interesting differentiator just on the hardware level alone, because so many Linux distributions can only look in retrospect at the hardware that exists.
Exactly.
You guys are planning ahead.
Well, that's mostly the effort what we are doing. The hardware vendors are having new production lines. They are planning new hardware types of servers, desktops, whatever. And they want, of course, to have these machines enabled for the future products, for their customers. So what we are requested to do is, for example, now for a major hardware vendor to enable this machine. So we are getting prototypes or, new machines over here, and our engineers are trying to enable our future enterprise products so that it works on this kind of new machines.
So you probably get some pretty cool new hardware, huh, Misha?
Yeah, you can say.
Yeah, for example, the notebook you're using, and we won't comment what brand it is, but that notebook you're using, we've had that like 3/4 of a year before. Not in that nice
right here.
not in that nice case, and prototype here, prototype there. But we had access to that hardware. So once you release a product, everything works.
Yeah, the drivers are there the day the product ships.
And it's tested,
optimized, and tested.
So a second part in this partnership is not only that the planning and the enablement of all these features. The one major point of this one is we have, of course, not an unlimited number of resources here. By partnering with such big vendors, hardware vendors and software vendors, we are trying to work very closely with them together and to align also, for example, testing efforts. So we are exchanging testing plans with them, we are exchanging test cases with them, scenarios, use cases, and like this we are able to use the 200 QA people from IBM, the 100 from Dell, the 50 from Oracle, and so on, making sure that these people, and which are customers of us in the end, work with us together to harden and to enable our product on their platforms. It's a huge effort.
And one of the technologies that allows us to actually achieve that goal is our build system and our configuration management system, which is called AutoBuild. And three things actually are important here. One is, by us using AutoBuild, we can accept changes to packages in our distribution very quickly. We can have them in what we call a beta tree, so a developer can test something. If it works sufficiently well, he can hand it over to QA and other developers, and when we're satisfied, we can fully integrate it. The other thing is, with AutoBuild, we are able to churn out CD and DVD ISOs at incredible rates. I don't have the numbers ready right now, but we're talking about like hundreds of ISOs a week during the Qt 10 release cycle.
And we have a conversation coming up with the AutoBuild team, so we'll be able to talk to them a little bit about what's what that is. So we'll get a little bit more on that. What does AutoBuild do for the actual enterprise ability, or how does it make it more of an enterprise ready distribution? Can you give us just a little bit of that?
Well, it ensures that the product is built in a, how do you call this in English? In
a consistent way.
Consistent way. So the right environment with the right libraries without missing dependencies on, and the most important thing, on all platforms. Well, this AutoBuild is one major pillar, if you want so, in our common code base history. So it's, you need this AutoBuild as enabling for this common code base.
So let's talk a little bit about testing and QA. What do you do in testing and QA to ensure that the distribution is ready for the enterprise and solid and not going to have bugs?
Nothing. Sorry.
Okay, next question.
So, okay.
That's called keeping the audience paying attention right there.
We started very early in our history to put a lot of effort in automating testing. That's a main issue for to make sure that we can get the needed coverage which is requested in a enterprise environment. If you see that we have each week, for example, a new cut, a new snapshot, a new beta coming out, and we have to make sure that thousands of test cases are run during this week until the next snapshot is coming out, the only way to handle this is a huge portion of automation. So that's one part of the QA and testing process where we are very proud of. If you can talk about the auto build and you have at the same time something like an auto test, a test environment where tests are running automatically, partially in AutoBuild, partially outside of it. We have a huge database with test cases collected from the community, from NTS, created by us, and
NTS,
so on.
NTS, that's Novell Technical Support,
correct? Yeah, exactly. And one of the major things is in there that we are enabling also our partners, again, and customers, to deploy tests, and we can integrate them in our QA process. This means very early in a development process, we can make sure, for example, that an Oracle does not break, or an SAP, because we are running their in-house tests, their test suites and their certification suites in our testing environment. So with each kernel change that we have, for example, we make sure that Oracle is still running, that SAP is still running, and so on.
So we ensure that when we give you a security fix or an upgrade to a library or anything, it's not going to break the application that's running on it.
Exactly. Good.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about certification.
Yeah, so that's an interesting one because when we talk about certification, most people think about testing. You test the hardware, you test the software. From my point of view, as someone working with partners, the certification story actually begins much earlier because I don't want to give our first release candidate to our QA or Oracle and ask them to test, and then they come back and say, look, it doesn't crash, but it doesn't fulfill our needs, so it's completely useless for customers.
So when you're saying certification, then, Gerald, you're saying that this is certification with the partner so that the partner puts a stamp on our product saying this is certified with SAP, or is it the opposite? Is it
it's
saying,
both.
It's both directions.
Well, if you look at things as a stack, so you have the hardware, you have the operating system on top of that, yeah. You have the middleware, and then you have the applications. How stacking works is usually that one layer certifies
the
underlying layers. So Novell, with our enterprise products, we certify hardware. Middleware vendors certify SUSE Linux Enterprise server or desktop. And then the application vendors certify the whole stack, either they certify specific middleware or the same middleware on X and Y.
In some cases, there is an exception, like the Novell YES certification program, which certifies in all directions, but it's...
You mean like a complete stack certification, then?
No, the Novell YES certification certifies the hardware and certifies also software. So we are giving partially software vendors or ISVs a certificate that their product is running with our operating system. But the usual way is you have the hardware, you have the operating system, you have the middleware and the application, and it goes top-down.
And the reason you want certification is customer having a technical problem, he wants to pick up the phone and say, okay, fix this. And what he doesn't want to hear is Oracle responding, sorry, Oracle and Debian is not certified, we don't support that.
So that really brings up the final thing you guys mentioned, which is support. The ability for when a customer has a problem to get on the phone, to call somebody, to call Novell specifically, and say, I'm having a problem, and really rely on us to figure out the problem, whether it's software, whether it's hardware, and not point fingers back and forth, right?
Yeah, right.
Can you talk a little bit about the support that we provide?
Sure. Basically, the idea with the support is we and our major partners want to give it to customers is that the customer has one phone number that can be Novell, that can be an OEM, and the customer calls that one phone number. And he gets support from that phone number and doesn't have to care about the rest. Behind the scenes, what we have contracts, we have processes working with those other partners. So... when the customer calls, we take care of the rest. We call the hardware. We work with the hardware vendor. We work with the chip vendor. We work with the Java vendor, for example. And I have had more than my regular dose of such incidents recently. But the point is it works pretty well.
Yeah, what we are talking about is this mostly this level 3 support. So the level 1 support is done by the Novell support organization. When it comes into engineering in our organization, then this is a level 3 support incident where you need real tough people and bright people to help the customer out.
And that just goes out. So that gets escalated when they can't resolve at level 1.
Exactly.
It goes to backline support type people, level 2
exactly.
support.
And then
if it can't get fixed there?
Then it gets to one of our teams. We have dedicated engineers who take this level 3. And if these guys cannot solve it, then it goes to the crown jewels. And this is the SUSE Labs guys, which are, you know, the most bright people we have in the SUSE Labs, you know, kernel and glibc area and so on. And this one, this team is doing a very good job, mostly to help also the customer. So maintenance is a big portion of the work they have to do, unfortunately.
One of the key things that you guys mentioned that I really didn't think of before, though, is that the actual customer doesn't have to call us direct, that if they're having a problem with an IBM server, you mentioned that they can call IBM. And really what we're doing is we're guaranteeing that if a customer calls IBM and is having a problem with SUSE running on IBM, they can talk directly to IBM. And we're not going to tell IBM, you know, it's your problem, fix it on your own. We're going to work directly with IBM to make sure that
the problem's resolved. The main benefit we provide is there is no finger pointing. There is a customer problem, and we and the various partners do everything that's needed to get the customer up and running again. And that's our main objective, and that's what that's our business case, in fact.
Yeah.
So it really sounds like you guys have given us 5 things here. And by the way, without really much of a pre-compiled list, you guys have managed to bang, 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 nail out 5 and I guess that's kind of what we expect coming here and saying, give us a top five, and suddenly we've got five. So we've talked about partners, we've talked about auto build, we've talked about, what help me out here.
Testing, certification, and support.
Okay, so with these five items that you guys have given us right here, it doesn't sound like any one of them really stands alone. They're threaded throughout each other. I mean, we come to support, and it's back to partners. We talk about partners, and it's back into certification. So these are all really just kind of, you can't do just one of these things and have the entire thing stand on its own. Is that correct?
Sure.
So, all right.
Well, you know what, though? Since I've got you guys in the room, I do have one question that I've always wondered, which is, how does a new application get into the SLES distro? How is it decided what's going to be put in, or how do we decide that we want to add something new?
Or another way to look at that question, I guess, would be, when do you guys block? When do you stop it from going in?
Well, this guy is Mr. No.
No.
Dr. No.
Actually, that was my predecessor who had that nickname.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have a tool, and I think when you talk to our internal tools team, you will hear about the tool. It's called Fate, the Fate of Features. And basically, we have opened that tool to everyone inside Novell. So engineers can make proposals. Obviously, PM can make proposals, and they have a pretty strong vote. And partners also have access. And at the end of the day, we have a large soup of feature requests. We're talking, for Qoo10, we're talking about virtually thousands. Can you imagine? Thousands of feature requests. And then we sift through all of these, because all of these, someone considered it important enough to do the work, make the feature request. We sift through those. PM gives some rough ideas on the focus of a product. For example, it was very clear from the beginning that XGL won't be requested for the server product, because it doesn't make sense to have XGL on a C-Series mainframe, because C-Series mainframes don't even have any form of graphics output.
XGL's the desktop effects that we've been seeing.
Those cool wobbling
windows.
Turning
cubes and all that. Yeah, exactly. I guess it doesn't really make sense to have that on an S390.
It's very cool for a desktop. You don't need it for a server where you only have a serial console.
Right.
On the other hand, OpenOffice would be another example. You don't run OpenOffice on a big server. On the other hand, Samba server, Apache web server, not for a desktop product. So it's these kinds of guidelines you get from PM.
Yeah, one part is, of course, you know that you have a feature, but you need an application for this. And for example, you have three or four applications which do more or less the same outside in the community. One help is, of course, the opensuse.org, where you have maintainers, you have the applications in there, and you can take a look which one is the more solid, the more mature of them. And together with the community, we also select the application that we will then integrate in there, which fits this special feature.
So when somebody requests a feature, you go out and you take a look to see what the best, most stable, and maybe most mature application out there that meets those requirements is available. And if it makes sense and if it's solid enough, you'll put it in the release.
Well, this is valid, of course, for applications. If you have features like new SCSI driver or something like this, then you don't go for this one, but you take whatever is in there and upgrade this driver.
So it's, we need to see whether there is a benefit for the general customer base. Sometimes you get feature requests which make sense for one and only one customer. You don't want to put this in a general purpose product with all the QA and 7 years of maintenance.
It depends on the business case.
Well, we can talk, yeah. Again, if the business case is sufficiently large, if you throw millions at us, we can do something.
Business case is large, or you throw millions at us.
Well, actually, coming from the product management side, I understand this, because it's quite often that we have one customer that's asking for one feature, but when you really look at it and you think about what they're asking, you realize that that customer is actually just about 18 months or 2 years ahead of everyone else, and you know that everyone else is going to be asking for that same feature down the road, so you might as well start to think about it now.
Yeah.
And start to build for it.
Right. And another gating factor, obviously, is feasibility. We need to be sure that we can get the thing stable enough or it's already sufficiently stable in the community and we just need to do testing and final stabilization. We need to make sure we have the knowledge in-house so we can handle the support for the customer.
Now you mentioned for the third time testing, and I want to say also something more to this testing. One aspect which I didn't mention before, which is great and it's a huge positive value for Novell, is all the testing teams and the labs and the experience that we have in Provo. There are dozens of people which have a very, very long experience in stabilizing and making a product hard. And to work together with these guys and to use their knowledge and their equipment, the super lab and so on, it's of course what major issue to get this product like it is now.
Absolutely. And being two guys that have just come here from Provo, we'll take that as a thank you. So, guys, we really appreciate your time, taking some time out of your day to talk to us, give us a sort of different view than what you might see inside of a lot of the marketing literature. So, Gerald, thank you. And, Misha, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah,
we really appreciate
it. Thanks a lot, guys.
You're welcome.
And that's it for this episode of Novell Open Audio. We're going to be cranking out a whole bunch more episodes over the next few weeks. It's going to be a fairly intense time frame here, especially if your name is Mike the Audio Guy. Remember that Novell Open Audio is brought to you by Novell Users International in conjunction with Novell Incorporated and is entirely directed or mostly directed by the two characters you hear here, plus our listeners who tell us who to talk to, what interviews to get, things to do, etc. You can go online and rate any of our episodes by going to novell.com/openaudio, and you can email us your suggestions by emailing openaudio@novell.com. That's it for this show. We'll see you next time.